Fixing hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons. We've got sportly commentary to an FU commute. But we also cover movies, TV shows, hits and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hockey and nonsense. Part two.
I'm Greg Wyshynski of the worldwide leader ESPN. Not only in sports, also in everything else that you can get on Disney Plus. And I don't know if you saw, boys, but Disney Plus is available, and according to Adam Schefter, it will change lives.
Did he say that? That's cool. That's really cool.
It has already redefined the way that I do not engage with pop culture.
It's perfect. Perfect.
Ryan Lambert, guys, Yahoo, blah,
yeah,
blah,
Yahoo, that's blah,
yep,
blah.
Sean McNeil, The Athletic.
No, you're in puck soup. We have to start, obviously, with the biggest news in hockey of the week, news that I think a lot of us are really frustrated by and angry about.
Sidney Crosby's injury.
No, it's not that. It's something where you think you know a situation, and then something happens, and the situation gets turned on its ear, and you just get really upset about it. And I'm, of course, talking about the fact that that one dude who stole the other dude's ice cream, they knew each other. It wasn't strangers. It was, they were friends.
That is the ultimate example of people who are wrestling fans saw that fucking work coming a mile down the road.
It's a swerve,
and people who aren't,
bro,
were like, oh my god, that's so funny. You didn't even... Yeah, of course he fucking...
Dude, I was just shocked. Like, absolutely jaw-dropping that this wasn't some stupid marketing thing. That we just found out that they knew each other and kind of did it on purpose. And it wasn't like some sad viral marketing campaign for some ice cream or whatever.
Yeah,
that's where I met with social media.
Oh,
I'm just like,
wow.
When I see something,
yeah,
I'm like, all right.
That's another.
It didn't even occur to me that that might have been like set up by Edie's or some ice cream company.
I got to be honest. There is still like 30% of me that thinks the Hurricanes did this as a viral marketing thing, and then like the backlash against it of like, please don't let this be stupid viral marketing. They were like, yeah, but let's just tiptoe away from it.
No. I actually reached out to the Hurricanes the day after this happened, and I'm like, you know, did you have a hand in this? I was like Terry Benedict at the end of Ocean's 11.
Yeah,
up to George Clooney and be like,
lie.
Did you have a hand in this?
They're a bunch of jerks. I don't know if you've heard that.
They are a bunch of jerks, but they said that they didn't set this up, and I think they would have admitted it if they had. And at that point, I was like staring at my Fox Mulder I Want to Believe poster and being like, maybe this was some dick who stole some other dude's ice cream. But then I believe it was Emily Kaplan, my ESPN and Ice partner, who pointed out that who holds an ice cream cone that way? Like, that guy was kind of holding it in sort of a quasi Lady Liberty stance while he was looking at that dude's phone, and just kind of putting it out there to make it available for someone to steal. And so she immediately thought it was a work. I was hoping that it was a shoot, but it turned out to be somewhere in the middle where I think it wasn't a setup necessarily, but these two dudes definitely knew each other, and it wasn't a stranger taking someone's ice cream and then walking away with it, which would have been amazing.
Disappointing.
So there you go.
Okay, good show. Thanks, everybody.
Oh. Well, no, it says here on the rundown there's something that happened with Dom Cherry. Oh, yeah. No, wait, Don Cherry. Ah, there it is.
Sorry, I can't hear you very well because my country is on fire right now.
Well, that's fantastic. I'm in California and you're in Canada. We're both on fire right now. Look, we're not going to – everybody's read everything that they possibly could want to read on the Don Cherry stuff. I think Ryan and I have probably been banging the drum for a while for him to go, right? You've probably been banging it longer than I have as far as – time has passed by.
I would say so.
Yeah. Sean came on ESPN and Ice and was very eloquent about his feelings.
Oh, that's interesting.
It was because he's Canadian. It's because I assumed that I knew what I was going to get out of you if you came on the Dumb Podcast about this issue. So you can listen to that for his more nuanced
thoughts. By the way, just thank you for having me on that. And I... I just, in my head, I'm trying to picture traveling back to like 1993 and telling teenage Sean that someday in the future, Don Cherry's going to get fired. And the two people who will get to talk on ESPN about it are going to be you and Barry Melrose. And just watch that little teenage brain explode.
I enjoyed having Barry on about it. Like, I thought, I know that, listen, it's an unsafe environment right now for thoughts of people that maybe have an affinity for Don Cherry, but understand why this should happen. I think it's a black and white world, and I think that, you know, you have to come down with the band hammer right now on Don Cherry and not really talk about it with much nuance. There's a lot to unpack here. I don't know how much we really want to do because it's been beaten to death by everybody this week. But I will say this. I'm really surprised there hasn't been more discussion about the kind of inside baseball on why this probably happened. I'm surprised there isn't more discussion about, oh, Sportsnet literally clipped, you know, five other people in the last year that make a lot of money and then, you know, saw an opportunity where public sentiment had turned so harshly against Don Cherry where they could probably do the same with him and not have to worry about bringing him back next year.
Yeah, it's not bringing him back next year. I'm assuming they're still paying him this year. So I don't think they're actually saving the millions of dollars that some people think they are. And I feel like this was probably going to be his last year anyways, but I've felt that for a few years now. So yeah,
right, exactly.
I would say if I'm Sportsnet and I'm thinking I want to get rid of Don Cherry and I'm just looking for a time to do it, I do it in the off season. I announce it like over a long weekend in August kind of thing. I don't do it in the middle of the season, but when this situation presents itself.
But what you said though is true though. Like, in order to do it in the off season, Don has to not want to come back. And I think that was the issue this summer. Like, in theory, they probably don't want him back this year. You know, they're cutting costs. They're trying to reshape the way that their broadcast looks. And they probably didn't necessarily want it back, which is why, you know, he basically told, I think, a columnist or somebody, oh, yeah, I'm coming back. And at no point...
It was Steve Simmons.
Steve Simmons reported that Cherry might not be back. And, you know, I know we all, every time you say Steve Simmons, everyone does their hot dog jokes and all the other stuff. But Steve Simmons typically knows what he's talking about with this sort of thing. So I don't think he just pulled that out of the air. That was either he got hold of something that hadn't been fully decided yet, or maybe even got hold of a trial balloon someone was putting out there. And then Cherry said, no, I'm coming back. And at that point, and then for months, there was no official word. Like, they never actually came out and said that this is that. So, there's still part of me that wonders if maybe this summer wasn't supposed to be and then the way it played out, they felt like they didn't have a choice.
And then it could easily play out the same way next summer with you know, Cherry inviting himself back. And then you can't say no, because then you've got another, you know, not as much of a firestorm as this, but you got another firestorm to deal with. And, you know, the other thing too about this that I'm surprised hasn't been talked about enough is all of those changes that were made by Sportsnet for fiscal reasons, allegedly, are also being made because no one likes their product. Like, you know, they got rid of Kyprios. They got rid of John Shannon. They made these sort of cosmetic changes to their coverage.
A lot of people don't like their product, but a lot of people do. This is the sort of thing. And whether it's Don Cherry or whether it's Hockey Night Canada in general, and I know this is going to come across as kind of a condescending thing to say, but I just need to remind everyone, like, your Twitter feed is not real life. And the people that you have picked to follow on social media aren't necessarily everybody. And the fact that, you know, nobody you follow likes Don Cherry, or nobody you follow has any problem with what Don Cherry said, like, that doesn't mean that that's what real life is. And the same with the bigger picture, Hockey Night Canada. There's a lot of people who are perfectly happy to have Don Cherry at one intermission and Brian Burke in the other, and more angry white guys scowling and pounding the table. And they think that's just great. It's a tough job to put this show together in this country these days, because there's a wide spectrum of what people would like to see out of this show.
Sure, and that's why they hired a younger guy who wore leather pants and then they got rid of him real quickly and brought back Ron McLean. It's you have to placate the people that want a certain thing out of Hockey Night in Canada. I will say that the numbers bear out that people much prefer the personalities on TSN. And I think the personality gap is the one of the reasons why Sportsnet reshaped their coverage. And Don Cherry, while I'm sure extremely popular, is also limiting, as we saw in this whole firestorm this week, in the sense that when you are – look, this is my conspiracy theory on it. I think the Toronto Raptors changed the math for a lot of people. I think the people at Rogers and the people in Canadian media saw the multicultural makeup of that crowd at Jurassic Park – and all across the country, and said to themselves, what the fuck are we doing with hockey? Like, why doesn't our audience look like that? Why don't we have young people of color coming out en masse to watch the Leafs in that same area? Like, why is it different? I think they realized the world had changed, all of a sudden. And they had to change with it. And, you know, that's, I think, one of the reasons why this thing the wave on this thing crested the way it did is because it's not simply just Don Cherry said something offensive, because he said it before. For fuck's sake, we're 6 years removed from saying there shouldn't be women in the fucking locker room, and he was still on the air. I think the problem is he's finally said something that's bad for business. And that's why he's not there anymore. He said something that's bad for business, that limits the audience, that you can't have, you know, half of your marketing team trying to pitch to young Raptors fans. You can't have Hockey Night Punjabi on your network and have a guy being like, you people. You can't have it. They can't coexist in the same market. And I think that's why this thing was different.
Yeah, and...
That's correct, yeah.
Yeah, and look, I mean, I do think that what he said this time was worse than what he said in the past. I know that's dangerous territory to get into because he said things that were misogynistic. He said things that were xenophobic and he said things that were against French Canadians. And if you're in one of those groups, you kind of go, well, wait a second. Well, how come when he took aim at me, it wasn't, how come you thought this was worse than that? And I don't want to get into ranking and trying to sort of divide things up into tiers or whatever.
With that having been said, here's the top 10 things. No.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, this guy has been, he has been offending people for a very long time.
Ever, yeah.
Even if you put that aside, here's the other thing that I think contributes to the context of why now? Why? How come this time and not last time or the time before that or the time before that? Is I think there's a truth here that even I would imagine the biggest Don Cherry fan, the biggest Don Cherry defender would have to acknowledge, which is that Don Cherry has not been good at this job for a long time now.
Correct.
There was a piece, I think it was Colby Koch wrote it in the National Post, which is a newspaper up here in Canada. I would recommend people seek it out because he makes what I think is an important point in helping people understand Don Cherry and who he was and why he matters. When Don Cherry first started doing this in the 80s and even well into the 90s, he was really, really good at being a hockey analyst. Even if you didn't like the politics that back then were not a big part of the shtick, even if you didn't like the views on fighting and like he was really good at telling stories, at relating what kind of stuff might be going on inside of a room because he had been in one only a few years ago and understanding the culture and understanding even some of the X's and O's. Like they used to have him like Coach's Corner used to be him just standing there and breaking down plays. He was really, really good at it and was very influential, not just in how hockey is covered, but sports broadcasting in general. Like he was very good at this all through the 80s and well into the 90s. But that still leaves us like 20 more years of Don Cherry just increasingly, and I say this as someone you guys know who has a lot of time for this guy, just morphing into this caricature and you know, the outfits going from being flashy to just being over the top ridiculous and the, you know, just the yelling and the getting confused and forgetting names and all of this stuff to the point where... He wasn't good for a long time. And so if Don Cherry had walked in the door in 2002 and auditioned with this act, he would have never got anywhere near TV. because it wasn't anywhere near good enough back then, let alone these days. So I think that's part of it too. Like, why, how come they didn't get rid of him in the 90s when he was saying that Russian players were pukes and somebody should go and break Thomas Sandstrom's arm? Because he was really good back then and really popular. And these days he was maybe popular, although not to the same extent, but he wasn't good at it anymore.
And that's, Ryan,
that matters.
Ryan, before you jump in, I just want to say, I think the other difference is that, and Dave Hodge pointed this out, the things you mentioned about like breaking Europeans' legs and shit, that's kind of hockey related, right? And what happened with Coach's Corner is that gradually it started to slip into Don Cherry's political bully pulpit, and the more sort of non-stick-to-sports topics that would be broached there, the worse it got for him and the worse the segment got.
Which is reminder that stick-to-sports has never meant stick-to-sports. It always means stick-to-sports or... Don't say anything
don't speak,
I don't
agree.
Don't
speak truth to power, please. We're begging you. Is what
it means don't express any non-sports views that I don't agree with. Because none of the people who yell stick to sports at Deadspin were yelling that at Don Cherry. And probably vice versa. So it's...
Right. Yeah. Ryan, what's your take?
Fuck Don Cherry. There it is. That's the whole take. Good riddance.
I do want to say that part of my education this week on this issue was I didn't realize how many people in Canada were aware of Tucker Carlson and understood what Don Cherry going on that show.
Are you kidding?
Yeah, of course,
dude.
I don't know.
I don't know if you're aware, but your country's kind of important and leaves a big footprint. We're aware.
I guess what I'm trying to say is that I knew that him going on Fox News would make sense, right? Because like I remember being in Canada when the Sun had their network and everybody being like, it's the Fox News of Canada. So I knew you guys were cognizant of Fox News. I just didn't know if, you know, Don Cherry says something racist and goes on Tucker Carlson, that the through line was that evident to my friends in the North. But apparently it is, because I had everybody fucking DMing me being like, you've got to be kidding me on this Tucker Carlson business.
His management of the fallout of this over the last week has been depressing.
Horrendous.
It's not just her, like, because he went from like, I, as bad as it was on Saturday, I still feel like if he had come out on Sunday and either apologized, or if he had said, look, I didn't mean it that way. I stumbled over my words. I did not mean to imply that immigrants or newcomers to Canada were any less patriotic than anyone else. I did not mean to single them out for a lecture on being good Canadians. I understand why that would be very offensive and very wrong. It was not my intention to do that. I'm sorry. I am responsible for my words, but I need people to understand that I would never view it that way, and I would never intentionally make that point. I think it doesn't necessarily just blow over like it's nothing, but I think he still has a job.
And he could have done it on Twitter. Like, he's tweeted shit before.
He could have done it anywhere. And this is kind of what makes this even sadder, is that he's doing this media tour, which is basically, I think, just him picking up the phone and talking to any of his friends who want to reach out and talk to him. Yeah. But it went from, hey, I stand by what I said. I don't apologize. That's never been who I am. Which, by the way, is not a virtue. Just if anyone's like, if you screw up, apologize. Like, there's nothing wrong with, there's nothing applause worthy of saying, I don't apologize. That's garbage. Mm-hmm. But that was his, you know, he said that for a couple of days, but then suddenly it was, well, I was going to apologize, but I was going to do it on Saturday. And then they fired me before that. But it had also been that they told him to apologize and he told him to go piss up a rope. And that's, you know, that was, that's, so, I mean, look, everybody, you talk about the inside baseball, like when you see all these statements coming out on Sunday from Ron McLean, from Sportsnet, from Hockey Canada, there is no chance that this is all happening and meanwhile nobody has reached out to Don Cherry and said, hey, we think you should do this as well. Like, he was clearly, there was an opportunity to do it one way or another. And if he had said to them, I want to clear this up on Saturday, I think there is a chance at least that he would have been given the opportunity to do that. He didn't, and now the story's changing. And that bothers me, because, you know, and you can already see it. And it's already up here in Canada. It's already the new chapter in the ongoing, never-ending culture war where everyone picks a side and it's just going back and forth trying to take a scalp. It's like you can already see people saying he got fired for saying we should wear poppies. No, he didn't. That's not true. He got fired for saying you people. No, he didn't. That's not true. He didn't say you people. If he had just said you people and everyone was offended, I would have been up there defending him because Don Cherry calls everybody you people. That's how he talks and it's how he's talked for 40 years. He said you people that come here, which is extraordinarily different and extraordinarily offensive.
And you people that come here and use our resources but don't honor the country.
Yes.
Like that's like, essentially what he's saying.
I'm all in favor. I don't like this thing we do these days where we always seem to want to ascribe the worst possible reading on people's words and never give anyone the benefit of the doubt. But also, we don't have to be stupid. Like, we can all look at something like this. We all know what he meant. We all know what he was getting at. He said it in so many words. And so if you're one of the people out there, if you love Don Cherry and you're ticked off that he's not going to be on the air anymore, okay. But don't tell me it's because he said it was that we should wear poppies. And don't say it's because he said, you people. That's not true, and you know it's not true. Engage with the actual substance of the discussion if you want me to take you seriously as an honest person.
And the other thing I'd say to that is also go read a few of the things that have been written this week by really, really insightful people that might not necessarily be in your same cultural echo chamber. I'm talking about Arpan Basu on The Athletic, Sanaya, our former coworker at Yahoo with The Athletic. There's a lot of really interesting, insightful, and nuanced things written by people of color in Canada that I think express what this comment did to them, that maybe is lost if you are just looking at this thing from a strict construction reading of his comments.
And I'll add to that, because I'll absolutely second that. Please do go and read what both Arpan and Sanaya both wrote. But I'll go one further. Read what they wrote. Read what I wrote. There were three pieces on The Athletic that were opinion pieces about Don Cherry this week, and mine was one of them. All three of us kind of came down on a anti-Don Cherry side to differing degrees, different versions of the take, different angles on it, but all pretty much wound up saying this. It was time for him to go. Go and read all three takes, and then go and read the responses to them. Read the comments. Read what people were saying on social media and look at the level of anger and the level of vitriol that was directed at Arpan and Sanaya versus what me with my nice Irish name got. Mm. And then, and just think on that and reflect on that and what it means. 'Cause I can tell you right now, I got some negative feedback over the last few days. It wasn't really that rough a ride for me. And certainly in comparison to what Arpan and Sanaya had to deal with, it wasn't even close. And I don't have to sit here and pretend like I don't understand why that is. So if you're the sort of person who kind of rolls your eyes at the idea that, we're all, just take a look at that. If you don't believe me, go take a look and actually take a minute to reflect on maybe what that says about this conversation. And even though it doesn't say anything good.
Mm-hmm. Well, there you go. Farewell to Don Cherry, who probably thought, okay. Fair to Don Cherry, who probably thought that he was, indestructible when it came to comments made on Coach's Corner. But then had to realize that, in fact, Rogers had him by the short and curlies. Speaking of short and curlies, today's episode of Puck Soup is sponsored by Manscaped.
Good. It's pretty good.
Number one in men's below-the-belt grooming.
It was okay.
Oh, yeah. I've been told, I actually went and listened to it, that the transition on last week's podcast when I was in Japan to the SeatGeek ad was legendary. And in fact, I have to genuflect to Lambert on that one, and I've given him the SeatGeek responsibilities going forward because I feel like I've lost my crown. But I wear it for Manscaped. It's number one in men's below-the-belt grooming. So ladies, if you want to tune out for the next 2 minutes, it's fine because we're going to, dabble in some trade secrets here. Manscaped offers precision-engineered tools for your family jewels. But gentlemen, it's no secret that occasionally you need to clean it up. Occasionally, you need to bonsai tree it. Occasionally, you need to treat the downstairs like it's, you know, the outfield at Citi Field. You got to make it look good and presentable, right? So it's time to gear up and get yourself the gift of shaving this holiday season. I'm talking about the Manscaped Perfect Package 3.0. I wouldn't want to know what 2.0 and 1.0 were. I mean, I'm clearly the technology has gotten a lot better in the third version. It's literally everything you need to keep trimmed, cut free, very important, and smelling nice down there. It includes the Lawnmower 3.0, a redesigned electric trimmer with proprietary skin-safe technology, the Crop Preserver, an anti-chafing ball deodorant and moisturizer, and a pair of Manscaped boxer briefs that will keep your junk feeling fresh all day. You know, boys, the holiday season's upon us, and you might have someone in your life of the male persuasion that you want to get that perfect gift for. And
you know,
honestly, it's one of those deals where it's not something they're going to ask for. I mean, we all know that. Oh, get me, as I mentioned on the bonus episode, an autographed Terry Bradshaw football. Well, that's something that you can ask for and receive for the Christmas or Hanukkah or whatever. This is not something they're going to ask for. But maybe you could do them a solid and get them the gift that they need, but maybe don't even realize it. So 'tis the season to Manscaped. Get yourself, your dad, your brother, your friends, whoever, the Manscaped Perfect Package 3.0. And this is the deal. If you're a little bit on the fence about this, Puck Soup listeners get 20% off their purchase and free shipping if you use the code PUCK, P-U-C-K, at manscaped.com. That's 20% off free shipping at manscaped.com, M-A-N-S-C-A-P-E-D.com, and use the code PUCK. Manscaped, get rid of that fucking forest. What's going on down there?
What is going on
both
down
of you
there?
Were very beautifully silent during that entire ad read. I love it. All right, so I have in front of me a list of the top 10 Don Cherry replacement teams that I've compiled. And some of these obviously are a bit more serious than others. I do think that if you are going to do this, I imagine they'll go with a duo and try to just take it in a different direction. Or maybe they'll just pick somebody that's sort of an echo of Ron and Don. Who's to say? But I'm going to start with my top choice. Okay? And this is the one that everybody thinks is going to happen, mm-hmm. at least half of it. David Amber and Brian Burke.
Yep.
So Burke is the betting favorite to take over for Don Cherry. Clearly fits the mole of old white curmudgeon who will say things that generate heat and be appointment viewing. And then you take some of the edge off of Sportsnet giving Cherry's job to a 64-year-old white dude by having David Amber there to be the Ron McClain to Brian Burke.
Right, which he already is on Burke's segments currently. So and they have good chemistry. I think if you're looking for the most seamless transition, that's it right there. Here's the problem. I think there's a very good case to be made that whoever follows Don Cherry is doomed to failure. Like this is,
I agree with that.
I know on the one hand, this is the most valuable real estate in all of Canadian broadcasting and everybody should be lining up to get it. On the other hand, I can't imagine anybody succeeding here. And certainly I know there's a lot of, and you'll probably have some suggestions along this avenue of saying like, let's go in a different direction. Let's give it to somebody who's younger, or let's give it to somebody who's got, you know, a different voice. It's right now, it's so ugly up here with how this has played out that you're just dooming that person to failure. And I think Burke's the one guy who might be able to succeed at it, partly because he's so similar. I think for all the things we could say about Brian Burke, I think he's a really smart guy. I could see him not wanting to do it. Him being like, out. I'm not. And I could see Hockey Night in Canada being like, you know what, let's get through this season, or at least the next few weeks. Let's not have anybody come in as the Don Cherry replacement, and let's let this cool down and then take a swing at it next time. So I do wonder if Burke would even do it, I think he might be the only one who's got any chance of it not being a complete disaster.
Correct. I think
regardless I think of how good somebody too. Is. Okay.
My second choice would be you take two of the guys with the highest Q ratings on that network and put them together, and they already work together. They already have chemistry. Jeff Merrick and Elliot Friedman. Now, I know the problem with Elliot is that he's also on the headline segment, so it might be too redundant. Maybe he can, like, wear, a loud suit or something for the other segment to differentiate.
Okay, now we're talking.
But, like, I figure if you take two really well-liked people and put them in that segment, that maybe you can also insulate yourself from the backlash.
I doubt it.
I think that would be tough because it's two guys who aren't it's not former players, former coaches, that sort of thing. Like it's two media right. guys. I will say, you know, Merrick is great. Both of them are great. Merrick does have experience carrying a less talented co-host to a good show, so that might come in handy.
Not bad.
Yeah. Oh, fuck you. Now we'll get off the board a little
All
bit.
Right.
Reinvention. It's got to be a certain level of reinvention. We just named some Sportsnet people that could easily move over to that gig, but you need to kind of think outside the box. Like you said, get a little bit younger, reach out to new audiences. One name that has come up a few times in the Derby for the new Coach's Corner, Paul Bissonnette. And I figure if you have Biz Nasty on the broadcast, you simply can't have him, you know, doing his usual shtick without there somebody being to take the edge off. Carolyn Cameron is somebody who has a rising star at Sportsnet. Put her with Paul Bissonnette and make Bissonnette your big fucking heat drawing promo cutter on the new Coach's Corner.
Yeah. I don't know. This is such a big spotlight that I don't think you want someone in there as their first major TV job. So I'll put it that way. Putting aside whatever you may feel about Paul Bissonnette and the work he's doing now. It would probably appease a lot of the Don Cherry fans out there, but this can't be a learning on the job sort of thing. I
agree with that. Would it bring new people to the broadcast if you had Bissonnette there?
Maybe. Hmm? It'll bring. I mean, that's the thing. There's going to be. This is the kind of thing where everybody who likes Don Cherry swears they're never going to watch again, and everybody who doesn't like Don Cherry who swears that they haven't been watching is now going to come back, and it's going to be interesting to see what happens with the numbers and whether it even. Has an effect, but I don't know. It would certainly potentially bring in a younger audience. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I'm, you know, if I was female or person of color or whatever else. I don't know that Paul Bissonnette would be the guy that would bring me back in. But it would probably be an improvement over what they had.
And it would also be someone that would carry on the grand tradition of having to apologize for shit you say that, crosses the line.
About Russians.
So,
yeah.
About Russians. Right. Back to the Soviet. Fuck. I revisited that tweet with all the Kovalchuk stuff going on this week, but that was really great. Oh, which we have to talk about later as well. Completely forgot. How about you go away from any sort of media type at all and just give it to the players? Everybody loves this trend of just having a couple of ex-players shoot the shit. I know that he just got a new job with the Florida Panthers, but who gives a fuck? Roberto Luongo and Kevin Bieksa as a duo on a revamped Coach's Corner. Canucks Corner, perhaps. Would you watch that?
Yeah, I like Roberto Luongo.
Yeah,
so
I'd watch it, but again, like you're this is someone who hasn't done a lot of TV and that. I don't know. It's I think if you're going to bring in Luongo, you got to open the vault and pry Duthie away from TSN. And,
yeah,
and he's
that's
another
true.
And I mean, he's another guy that I think is too smart to probably want any piece of this right now.
But I also think, and this was my problem with all the Ray Ferraro talk this week, is like TSN's not letting anybody of any, you know, super name recognition leave for that gig.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's just not going to happen. If you want to go and start to really affect change and react to what led to the downfall of Don Cherry, my fifth choice, Haranian Singh and Randy Janda of Hockey Night Punjabi as a duo in the coach's corner. Those guys are fucking rule.
Yep.
And give them 8 minutes a week.
They would be absolutely fantastic. And this would be a classic case of putting really, really talented people in a position where they had no chance at succeeding.
At ever succeeding.
It would just be brutal. And I hate saying that because we're letting the bad guys win when we say that. But I'm also trying to be a realist here. And those guys are great. And I don't know. Maybe, you know what? Maybe whoever we put there is not good. It is going to be in a no-win situation anyway. So we should just actually put someone who deserves it. And I should stop being so negative about everything. But no. I don't know, man. It's been an ugly week up here, and yeah.
It's fine. It's completely understandable. But maybe what you need to do is completely reinvent the segment and not make it a hot take fest. Maybe you make it a little bit smarter. Make it a little bit more analytic.
That's not going to be difficult.
The bar is set low. Now, I just got done saying that TSN's not going to let anybody go. But let's just say they let this guy go. What if you threw together Mike Johnson, very well-respected dude from NHL Network and TSN, a real brainiac when it comes to breaking down plays. Throw him with our good friend Justin Bourne from The Athletic and Toronto Radio and do like a fucking systems analyst segment every week for 10 minutes of them just intensely breaking down plays. Maybe you throw some new tech in there to have them be able to move the camera around the ice and shit like that. Really smarten that shit up with Bourne and Mike Johnson.
That'd be great. Somebody asked more or less this question to me on the mailbag this week, and my answer was Mike Johnson and AJ Molesko for same gimmick.
Absolutely. And that works too.
And yeah, like you have them break down film live on the air. That's two really smart, good on TV kind of people who aren't gonna they're not trying to do like a
schtick.
The hot take zone,
yeah.
You know, maybe the audience actually fucking learned something about hockey for once. I don't know. I that feels like it's almost too easy of an answer that like it'll never happen. But
I've been banging this drum for years that the fact that there is virtually no X's and O's coverage,
none whatsoever
of hockey in general, but certainly on the major broadcasts, like even compared to football or it's insane to me. So yeah, I'd love to see something like that.
Veering in the opposite direction, my seventh choice, just Ilya Bryzgalov. Just put Bridge in front of a green screen.
What would that sound like?
I don't know, Sean.
Let's not
there
find out.
There are Chinese tigers who are being haunted for their skins and their eyeballs, and you have to protect the Chinese tigers.
Bridge for 8 minutes and fucking go, and just put him in front of a green screen so whatever he's talking about can appear behind him. You know,
I don't want to be that intern that's like furiously typing, you know, like footage from the Hubble telescope or whatever.
They say that Pluto is no longer planet, but I will tell you over next 8 minutes why that is not case.
There was just a thing today about how NASA's head scientist actually is sticking by his Pluto's a planet thing.
Yeah, he claims that Pluto, you know, if you because it's all about the orbit of Pluto around the sun was one of the critical elements of the deplanetizing of Pluto, and his contention is that, well, now you're going to limit how many planets in our universe are you now limiting to not being planets by that measure. And it's a very good point.
Yeah,
number eight is definitely one that I know Ryan would tune in for. Steve Dangle and once in future Puck Soup guest Jillian Fisher. Give the segment to two vloggers and watch the Don Cherry fans flock to the broadcast every week to see these two apply their trade.
What we could maybe call that segment is ratings poison.
Oh, come on. I feel like I thought you were going to say Dangle and Hat Guy as the co-host would be. I don't know how you do that live, but I feel like the technology is probably there.
And Hat Guy would be so Dangle would be Ron McLean and Hat Guy would be Don Cherry. Would that be the way
you know
it works?
I'm not sure. I'd have to whiteboard and come back to you.
I like that. Number nine, and this is probably the one I'm most passionate about. perfect replacement for Don Cherry, Pierre Maguire and Jeremy Roenick. It would be awesome if Sportsnet signed both of these guys away from NBC. Absolutely awesome. I can think of no better scenario than if a Canadian broadcasting company were to remove these two individuals from American television. Hmm. Yes, I believe this might be the best choice. And you know what? Honestly, boy, you look around the landscape, everybody's doing three-man booths now. Bring up Mike Milbury, too. How exciting would that be? Pierre Maguire, Jeremy Roenick, and Mike Milbury all bought out of their contracts on American television, bought up to Canada, and then they have jobs up there from now on and don't have to be in the American media pool anymore.
You know what?
Wouldn't that be amazing?
I'm just going to point out, if you do it that way, you've got that opens up a whole bunch of jobs on American hockey broadcasts, and Don Cherry's looking for work right now, so figure it out.
And finally, number 10, this is probably the most popular pick, according to what I've been hearing on this this segment. Just end Coach's Corner. Just don't do it anymore. Just, like, you know, do your hot stove bullshit, and then do, I don't know, a feature on a player or something. Don't try to recreate something that's been a standard bearer for the last 30 years and expect it to work. Just don't try to redo it. Just end it.
Which is what I think they're going to do. I think we're going to get either an extended version of the kind of hot stove thing that they used to do and sort of still do in the second period. I think you'll either see that move up, or you'll see Ron McLean skating around on outdoor rinks in Saskatchewan talking about the poetic virtues of the game and minor hockey and all of that stuff. I think, at least in the short term, putting two people at a desk to talk like Don Cherry in Don Cherry's time slot is not gonna strike them as being an ideal option.
Not advisable. All right. Moving on to actual hockey topics. Sidney Crosby, hernia surgery? Is that what I saw?
Yeah, I think it was injury repair. They didn't call it surgery, yeah, so which was weird, unless there's a distinction
core
there.
Core muscle surgery is the thing that I see here. Core
yes.
muscle.
Although it had been reported on The Athletic that Rob Rossi had that scoop that it was a sports hernia.
Yeah,
it was a sports hernia.
It was a situation where he entered the year with it. And, you know, because the Penguins were pretty banged up to start the year, he didn't want to be the guy who also was on the shelf. So he tried to play through it.
And it was the kind of thing
that, as it so often does, didn't work.
Yeah, and it was the kind of thing that you could play through, and maybe he could finish the season and have the surgery in the off season. But doing that meant the risk that of re-injuring, making it worse, which could happen in March when you're heading into the playoffs. And so it sounds like he tweaked it on Saturday or Friday, I think it was. It got worse, and now they're just going to take care of it. And he should be 4 to 6 weeks, maybe more, but should be back 100% after that, and it won't be an issue anymore. So good news for the Penguins is they're off to a decent start. So this,
I mean, their problem is, and this is, you know, common for teams in the Eastern Conference in general, nobody's safe right now. Like, not anybody. Well, maybe the Capitals, the Islanders, and the Bruins. But anybody below those three teams is not safe at all. Like, nobody is locked into a spot, and everybody's within, like, 3-4 points of each other. And Tampa seems to be getting it together. And it's like, ooh, 6 weeks from now, like, Sidney Crosby could return to this lineup, and they're in a lot of trouble.
One team that I think is definitely safe are the Devils, safely in the basement.
Yeah.
No, they were looking great last night against the Senators when I turned that game off.
yeah.
Because it
never
was over.
Never turn off the game in the third period. Listen to this horror story of a start for the Devils. They've played 9 of their first 17 games on home ice. They've gone Hold on. They've gone 2-3-4. 2-3-4 in fucking those 9 games on home ice. That's 8 out of a possible 18 points. Horror shows in the third period. My God. You know how, like, one of the most reliable things in the NHL is if you enter the third period with a lead, you're probably going to fucking win the game? The Devils so far this season, when entering the third period with a lead, which has only happened 7 times, are 3-2-2.
Oof.
So, fucking 3 wins out of seven games when entering the third period with a lead, they've been outscored in the third period 24-9 in the third period. What a fucking disaster.
No.
It's really bad. Oh, so the Devils have blown just endless leads of all different varieties on home ice. And it happened again against the Ottawa Senators. They're in last place in the conference. I mean, they're going to pass the Red Wings because the Red Wings, they have three games in hand.
And so they're tearing ass right now. The Red Wings are beating everybody.
The Red Wings are tearing ass right now. That's true. So the Devils are, I mean, I don't, unless you have a St. Louis Bluesian run in you, which would require you to find another goalie.
You need
goalie,
a few St. Bluesian players, I think, for,
yeah,
for that to happen.
The Bluesian players. They are atrociously bad. They're probably already out of the fucking playoff race.
Oh, yeah.
And I'll give you one more stat. This is a great one. Remember when they got PK Subban and everybody's like, oh, this is definitely going to help them on the power play. Look it, they got Wayne Simmons to stand in front of the net and tip pucks and shit. He doesn't have a power play point in 17 games.
Simmons or Subban?
Subban.
Oof. Here's my question.
Like, here's the thing. Oh, go ahead.
Well, no, you do yours, and because then I got a question for Greg.
Oh, I was going to say, like, he has otherwise been pretty good this year.
Yeah, especially relative to the Devils. Like, yes. His possession numbers have been good.
We've been pretty good relative to the Devils.
Okay, like, to be fair, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But my God, yeah, like, the statistic output, especially where you're looking for him to make a difference, like on the power play with the Devils, I think are now like 26th in the league. Fucking atrocious.
Here's my question. Like, I know every time when the Devils aren't doing well, all the attention is going to be on Taylor Hall, and rightly so. And it sounds like Elliot Friedman reported last weekend that it's very unlikely he's going to sign, and that's going to be a huge mess. Should we start at least thinking about the possibility of PK Subban being traded again? Like, is that with them retaining some salary and trading a guy while he still has value? If we just say, you know what, we're going into rebuild mode here. He's got 2 years left on the deal after this year, so it's not, you know, the cap hit is high, but you can mitigate that. Is this what we should be looking for in addition as the undercard to not that Taylor Hall and PK Subban would ever be traded on the same day, but could it happen?
That's a really good point, and I mean. By the way, Taylor Hall has had a really weird year. 2 goals in 17 games, but 13 assists for 15 points. So 15 and 17, not the worst start in the world for Taylor Hall. But, I mean, the Devils right now have two guys in double digits in points. It's Hall and Palmieri. It's fucking brutal. That's not a bad thought, Sean. And I do think that, if anything, them cratering this season makes that decision – it takes the John Tavares – mealy-mouthed should we or shouldn't we trade deadline thing out of the equation if they crater. Yep. Like, you obviously trade Taylor Hall. So at least he got that. And the other thing, too, is if you are going to gut the team, I mean, the good news is that you've got two pillars to build around in Heischer and Hughes. Like, there is another chapter to this that
it's
I think
not
is,
scorched
is pretty
earth
obvious.
Start over from scratch.
Right. Like, you've got some pieces in place, but this is a fucking disaster. Like, this was a team that clearly had some designs on being something more than an also-ran this year. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, obviously the biggest issue with Taylor Hall is that if you trade him at the deadline, he won't be around for the draft lottery.
That's it.
So then you can't get the top pick, yeah. So from that aspect, you're kind of fucked. But,
and folks,
yeah,
if you want to be around for the draft lottery, there's one place to go, and that's SeatGeek. You got to go on there and buy the tickets for it. So, listen, they have millions of live event tickets from sports, live music, comedy, and more. SeatGeek has the tickets you're looking for all in one place, especially to the draft lottery. All right? The thing is, it's an app. You get it on your phone, and it has every seat available, and it rates those deals on a scale of 1 to 10 and displays them on, like, an interactive seat map. There's green dots that mean good deals. Red dots mean don't get the tickets. And
don't get those tickets.
You don't have to worry about, like, oh, am I getting a good deal? You just get the seat at a price you want, and you can just enjoy it, right? And the thing is, every purchase fully guaranteed. So you can shop with confidence that, you know, everything's going to go perfectly, and that's why SeatGeek, I don't know if you guys know this, has over 50,000 five-star reviews.
That's a lot.
Did you know that, guys?
I feel like I heard that somewhere, but every time I hear it, I'm impressed. Yeah.
It comes up every once in a while, I feel like, just like in life. Listen, I have the SeatGeek app. It's a really easy way to find tickets. I just used the app to try to buy tickets to Elton John tomorrow night. Every ticket was like $400 and a little red circle. Yeah. So I said, I think I'm going to pass. But
it's the Goodbye Yellow Brick Road tour.
That's right.
It's his last tour.
He's calling it. So, going to be hard to come by. But if I were to go at this point, you know, it's been sold out for months, I would have to use SeatGeek. And if someone wants to just give me $600 so I can go to this show, great. That sounds awesome. So here's what you do. You go on SeatGeek. You type in the code SOUP. You're going to get $10 off your first purchase. That's S-O-U-P. It's the name of the podcast. Well, half the name of the podcast. Off you go. It's our promo code is SOUP. Get the app. Use it. $10 off. Pretty simple. SeatGeek is good. Bye.
And so just so I'm sure here, just for clarification, if you want to buy tickets to the draft lottery, which happened inside of a studio in Canada, you could use SeatGeek for that?
Yeah, that's right.
That good.
Greg, you didn't hear the part where I said concerts, live events, and more.
Oh, and more.
You didn't,
oh, that's
you didn't
covered
pick up
by
on
the
that,
and more.
So pay attention.
Right, I didn't. I'm not
there
very perceptive.
There are only two stupid guarantees in life. Taylor Hall draft lottery wins and Ryan Lambert ad transitions.
Home runs, baby,
right. Guaranteed.
Every time.
Taxes also probably.
Not if you're rich
death.
Enough.
That's
no,
right.
True. That's right. Mm-hmm. Speaking of rich, Ilya Kovalchuk, so that situation's going to shit.
Yeah,
he's
who
been
could have seen that coming, right?
Yeah, he's been absolutely horrible this season, and the Kings pulled him from the lineup and basically said you're going to be a healthy scratch in perpetuity, which is a handy way of trying to force someone to waive their no move to go anywhere. But it sounds like this is headed towards release city between Kovalchuk and the Kings.
Yeah, right after he gets that
factor,
bonus check.
Yeah, the big factor here is a giant $5-plus million bonus check he's due on December 15th. It's sort of a waiting game. There's a lot of negotiation, a lot of moving parts. The word that all of the insiders that have been talking to Rob Blake said is liquid. Liquid. It's a liquid situation right now, mainly because Kovalchuk's offense has been diarrhea this season. 3 points in the last 12 or 13 games for Kovalchuk, only one of them at even strength. And an absolute defensive fucking sieve this year, too. A complete disaster.
And, you know,
one of the
you
worst
go out,
signings.
You get an Ilya Kovalchuk because you want him to play defense. That's why you go get a guy like that.
No, but I mean, you have to be competent, though. He's been incompetent defensively this year.
Yeah, who's
a
been
liability.
Good on the Kings this year? Besides, okay, you're going to say Sean Walker, who we've all definitely heard of and is a real guy. but, like, no, I mean, you know. I think there's a lot of, you know, he's a real big part of the problem there. And it's like, is he even in the top five really? You know, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. So where does he end up? Pittsburgh or Washington?
the Chelyabinsk Penguins is where he's going to end up. He's done in the NHL.
You think it's back to the Soviet in the words of Biznasty?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
I think it's up to him, really. I mean, if he's released and he can go somewhere with his $5 million in his pocket and sign a $1 million deal with a contender and maybe even have a bit of a chip on his shoulder, he might not be done. But I could absolutely see him saying, okay, tried, didn't work out, I'm out of here. Mm-hmm. Those are possibilities. I'll just throw one more out there. St. Louis, you know? They're looking for a little bit of offense on the wing. There's no evidence he can provide it at this point. But do you gamble? Do you roll the dice and say let's see what he's got?
The Rangers have sniffed around Kovalchuk forever too.
That's a very Rangers acquisition, Dave.
That's a very old Rangers acquisition. That's a very Bobby Holík contract.
It's very
era,
Bobby
Holík. Acquisition.
It's very Martin St. Louis. It's very pretty much everyone. Everyone who wasn't old enough to end their career with the Red Wings, could go to the Rangers.
I think part of the equation too is like he clearly came to LA, put a bunch of fucking smoke out there about, you know, oh, I want to win a cup. But, like, he came to L.A. to live in Beverly Hills. Like, he loved living in Los Angeles. And, you know, if he's looking for another place to go, it probably is going to be, like, New York.
Suggesting Pittsburgh or somewhere be, in those.
I don't know. I mean, I assume that Malkin can show him where the good borscht is. At the same time, I have to assume that there's a quality of life situation here for Ilya Kovalchuk. And again, he can go back to Russia and make a bunch of fucking money and live there with his family like he had for previous seasons. So a couple more topics here. Holy shit, the Leafs. What the fuck's going on there, Sean?
No, I mean, okay. they're very mediocre. Is what's happening, and it's not just one thing. It's several things. They have had some injuries, but not St. Louis has had injuries, and Pittsburgh's had injuries. There's guys get injured. That's part of it. Tyson Berry has not been great since he got there, which I don't know if that's a Tyson Berry problem or a how they're using Tyson Berry problem. You know, says the
now hold on, Mike Babcock's making weird personnel decisions. Yeah. Are you serious?
It turns out Mike Babcock was not the one to unleash the offensive potential of your big offseason acquisition. I think coaching's part of it. I think the defensive, like, hey, where are we playing playoff defensive style hockey is part of it, although not as big a part of it as people make out to be. The fact that they had a bunch of back-to-backs, and they always played their backup goalie for the second half, and he was bad. That basically kissed away, like, it was either four or five games, and I don't think they got much in the way of points out of any of them. So it's a lot of things, and it's fixable. I don't think this is necessarily a disaster yet, but it's trending. I mean, missing the playoffs would be a disaster, and that's what they're trending towards, so they got some time to figure it out, but It gets late early in NHL season. So,
and like you said, like Montreal punching above its weight, Florida's figured itself out. You know what the Bruins are, and now the Lightning are going to start.
That's
up.
The thing.
So
like they're right now they're holding down the last wild card spot, but that's because they played a few more games. If it's points percentage, they're already not there. But even if they're holding down the last spot, Tampa's behind them. Tampa's going to make the playoffs. They're passing them. Sure. Carolina's behind them.
Yeah.
Carolina's been kind of all over the map, so I wouldn't say they're necessarily a sure thing, but I wouldn't want them breathing down my neck. And Buffalo was good for a while, so who knows? That's probably it.
Jeff Skinner might score again at some point, so they'll turn it around. And then the Devils.
And then the Devils are charging hard. So
yeah. Absolutely.
How about this for a stat on the Leafs? Just to wrap this up, they've beaten six teams in regulation.
I saw this.
Those six teams are the San Jose Sharks, who are in 25th, the Columbus Blue Jackets, who are in 26th, the Ottawa Senators, who are in 27th, the Detroit Red Wings, who are in 28th, the Minnesota Wild, who are in 30th, and the Los Angeles Kings, who are in 31st.
You know, first of all, speaking from experience, beating the Senators is really tough. but also, I will say that it's almost like, and correct me if I'm wrong, it's almost like Mike Babcock has never won anything of consequence without J.S. Jaguar having the playoff of his life, Nick Lidstrom as the linchpin of his defense, or a Canadian All-Star team on the ice. It's almost
weird.
As if maybe he has been the beneficiary of some things and isn't necessarily the guy that deserved the massive fucking 8-year contract or whatever the hell they gave him when they signed him. I mean, it's almost like that. Maybe. It's crazy,
it's
right?
It's kind of like that, yeah.
Holy shit, the Islanders. We don't talk about the Islanders a lot on this podcast because we know it infuriates Islanders fans that we don't.
Or when we do.
But I do.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, but like, fucking, they're great. They're. I mean, Barry Trotz, man, back-to-back Jacks? It probably can't happen because of the way that the voting for this thing
should,
goes.
If it keeps going this way. It's happened once before, and that was back in the 80s, and it was kind of a different time now. He should win it again, and it should absolutely, the Jack Adams should be like the Hart Trophy. If you're the best, you should be able to win it 5 years in a row. It's dumb that we have at some point decided it has to be the most improved team award, but yeah.
Well, we also have to think about who's due this
that's
year.
True.
Who's due to win the Jack Adams?
Yeah.
Right, that's
but,
a very
man,
good point. Very
the
good
Islanders
point.
Look great. At the same time, like, how frustrating must it be to go 9-0-1 and you look up at the standings and the one team you're chasing has also been 9-0-1? and you haven't gained any ground. Yeah, and you're just crazy. Like, are you kidding me? But they're, I mean, based on, they've got three games in hand in Washington. They're 5 points back. So they're, that's close to calling it even. I don't know. Maybe this whole Mitch Korn goalie whispering thing has more to it than I thought, because you can't score on these guys, and they.
But it's also the Barry Trotz, let's keep every shot on the perimeter thing
too. I mean,
they have one of the worst expected goal against rates in the league. Like, the puck's just not going in. And you know it, that I would say, okay, now we have enough evidence with, like, even Braden Holtby before this, where you go, you know what? They're pretty good. Yeah, they're 10th worst in expected goals against per 60 at 5-on-5. And goals against per 60 at 5-on-5, they are the best at 1.82. Wow. So, you know, it's a pretty big swing. I don't know that even Mitch Korn is that brilliant, where he's like, yeah, we can cut a full, like, goal and a half off or whatever the number is. but, you know, obviously they're doing it again. And it's Thomas Greiss and a different starter. Or, you know, ostensible starter, where they're doing it. So, you know, there is a quantity over quality thing, but also, like, they do have one of the worst. Let's see here. They are 7th worst in expected goal difference. And, you know, that will catch up to them at some point. But, again, if the goaltending is going to hold up like this, like, not to the extent that it probably should.
And we should.
Sorry, Sharks are starting to turn it around a little bit.
We should maybe just quickly mention Andrew Ladd. Waived today. I don't know if you guys saw that. But
only 3 years left on that one.
Yeah, that July 1st, 2016 was may very well been the dumbest day in NHL history, when all of those aging wingers got massive contracts that have all been disasters.
So that was Lucic. That was
Erickson,
Okposo, right?
Ladd.
Erickson. Franz Nielsen, who's been really bad, actually, this year. Yeah. That was also, I believe, the Backus contract.
Troy
was
Brouwer is the good mess. Deal that got signed that day.
And he's on his, what, third different team since it got
That's
signed?
That's the one where you're like, we nailed it.
Yeah. What the fuck with Vegas? Sharks making their move in the Pacific now that they're back on home ice. Vegas, very middling this year, and I can't quite figure out
what
that's about.
Keep waiting for it, and it's like, they're giving me a bit, and I'm not predicting that they're not going to make the playoffs, but they're giving off a bit of that Tampa vibe from a couple years ago. Remember when you spent the whole season going, they're fine, they'll kick it into gear, they'll get there, and then they miss the playoffs by 1 point, and you're like, it just never happened.
So my thing with them is I can definitely see a situation where their goaltending just kind of isn't great all year. You know what I mean? Like, they're two goalies where, you know, Marc-Andre Fleury's been up and down throughout his career, and so it's never a big shock if he's, like, not playing great. And then the thing I don't buy is that they're going to shoot under 7% all year.
Yeah,
you know,
that's,
like,
the issue. Yeah.
They have a 97 PDO right now, and you don't – I can't imagine that I'm not going to be able to look it up really quickly, but I can't imagine there's a team, especially a team with this much talent, that's been anywhere near that low over the full 82. And, you know, they're one of the best expected goals teams in the league. They're one of the best Corsi teams in the league. Like, and just about any measure that isn't just straight goal difference, you go, oh, they look great. And they just can't pick up that extra little something that gets them the goal. That makes the difference. So I do think they can just start putting the puck in the net more and call it good, but it's definitely, you know, like you said, time's wasting. So
The Colorado Avalanche stadium series sweaters leaked this week, and I was surprised by how many people dislike them. I think they're fucking awesome.
Yeah, they're cool.
Yeah, I don't have strong feelings on what uniforms look like. I didn't love them. They looked kind of weird to me, but I don't get super excited over any of this stuff, so I'm probably not the intended audience.
The one interesting thing about them stadium series jerseys is that they always seem exaggerated. I remember the some of those outdoor games they had, like with the Kings and the Ducks and stuff, like the logos were always sort of too big. on those
when
jerseys.
The fans are all like and, half a mile away, maybe it makes sense to.
Yeah, that's what it is, right? So, like, for the purposes of that, to create this kind of look for your jersey, I think is really cool, and it's got good use of negative space. And I don't know, man. I've long said that the Colorado Avalanche are a team that needs a logo refresh.
They certainly do.
And
this is a good start.
And this is a good start, but I mean, I don't know if I would make this necessarily the
no, not this
logo.
Jersey specifically, but the negative space thing and all that. Like, definitely, that's a good jumping off point. The thing I will say is that all the people who are mad about this because it doesn't have like a traditional logo on it, I would say probably 85% of them are also the freaks who like the big Vancouver Canucks V jersey. So
this is true. Finally, Hillary Knight made some news this week, and so did the NWHL. So the ongoing war between the elite women's players that left the fold and decided not to sign with the NWHL and go on their you know barnstorming tour and all this other stuff. There's been an ongoing battle between the league and the players where, and by the way, I blame the NHL for this. Like, the NHL has set up this sort of zero-sum game where they're like, well, we certainly can't start our own women's league if there's one around. And so basically the elite women's players have to pray for the death of the NWHL in order for the NHL to get involved with a women's league. So the NWHL announced today, as we do the podcast, that they have a new round of equity funding. They're in their fifth season. They found a new equity partner, and there's now talk that they potentially may expand to Toronto next season, if assuming there is a next season, which I guess we have to assume there's going to be. Meanwhile, Hillary Knight, in an interview with the Associated Press, called the NWHL a beer league. Like a glorified beer league is what she said about the NWHL and its level of play now that the elite players have decided not to return. A war of words, probably not the best thing for women's hockey at this point, but interesting to see that as the elite players continue to pray for the demise of the NWHL, they continue to pile on investors and even with an eye towards expansion.
Yeah, I mean, Hillary Knight is not wrong about this. If you don't have those elite, like, you know, name brand players, it's hard to argue that this is anything but like a league that kind of is on the level of a very good beer league, I guess you'd say, but a beer league nonetheless. Like, it's What would the NHL look like if the top 60 players in the league were just like, yeah, we're not playing this year. You know, the league would be a lot more difficult to watch. So I don't think she is out of bounds saying that. Maybe, like you said, maybe not the best thing for women's hockey in general right now, but that, you know, they're looking out for themselves and they want to get the NHL involved in this by hook or by crook. So that's the way you got to do it, I guess.
And it's like one of those deals where obviously like they can't put over the league, even though, you know, there's clearly a following for it because of just, you know, the necessity of trying to downplay it. And so interesting there. How are you on time, Sean? You good?
I'm good for a little bit. Yeah.
Okay, good. Just double checking because we're going to talk about the Mandalorian now.
Can't do that without me.
Disney Plus dropped this week. It's got a ton of cool shit on it. It was funny. Like, there was this big conspiracy theory about all the ESPN people tweeting about the service, people being like, "Well, obviously their corporate masters have told them to tweet positive things about Disney Plus." I did it the night it came out, and no one made that accusation about me because like, they know that I'm just like sitting there with a big fucking beer and being like, "Oh my god, Tron Legacy." So it's pretty cool. Like, all the Star Wars films are in 4K. It's got a ton of content on there with more to come, obviously, because the Marvel shows haven't even dropped yet. So I'm stoked for it. It's pretty great. And The Mandalorian made its debut this week. For those who don't know, it is the first scripted Star Wars television series, live action. The showrunners are Jon Favreau, famous director, and
Dave Filoni. Pod Save America guy, yeah.
There's a lot of hidden references to the Obama legacy inside of The Mandalorian. And then also Dave Filoni, who is the guy who did the Clone Wars cartoon and stuff. So it's great. I thought the first episode lagged in the beginning as you try to get a sense of what the pace of this thing is going to be. There's a few cute bits. I didn't really like the Horatio Sands alien character that's in the first part of the episode because it was a little too Star Trek for me. You know what I'm saying, yeah, Lambert?
I do.
But there's a great gag about space taxis that I appreciated. And once you get past the first maybe like 10 or 12 minutes of it, and Werner Herzog shows up with a bunch of stormtroopers, well, now we're talking. Like, now then the show really kicks into a different gear.
Yeah, the second that door opened, I was like, let's go.
Yeah.
And things just got interesting. Because I spent the first, whatever, 10, 12 minutes of the show going like, God, I hope this isn't like a Boba Fett origin story. I hope this isn't like taking place too far in the future from the rest of the series. Like, I didn't want it to just be like, oh, here's a different Mandalorian and he's going to talk to Rey and Finn. But
No,
they didn't do that either.
They didn't do that either.
It's 5 years after Return of the Jedi. So perfect.
And it's that's right, because you did no advance reading on this,
no,
did
of course
you? You're the no trailer boy. The thing about the Star Wars universe that I like is that you can do referential shit without it being a blatant member barriers thing. So by that I mean you can have the gunk droid. And you could have that little eyeball droid that's was at the door of Jabba's palace, mm-hmm, that spoke to 3PO and R2-D2. Like, you could throw all these little Easter eggs in there and not have it be forceful nostalgia like, say, like The Force Awakens is. And so I think The Mandalorian hits that really well. And then, like, the entire shootout action scene at the end of the first episode was just dynamite.
Yep, really
and,
cool.
It's a cool show. It's good. I'm very much looking forward to spending time in the universe that they're making. I guess we won't traffic in spoilers, but the last shot is fucking
cool.
Phenomenal.
Very cool.
Yeah. But there's another Star Wars thing that we wanted to talk about on Disney Plus.
Not so cool. It's very stupid, actually. It
all
sucks.
Right. Sean, you know the whole controversy with did Han shoot first?
I do, yes.
Okay.
I have seen that
to
movie.
Break it down for those who don't.
So I'm very excited to take part in this.
For those who don't know, so in the original episode for A New Hope in 1977, then known as Star Wars, Han Solo was introduced as the ultimate badass. Because in a meeting with a bounty hunter named Greedo, he just blew the fuck out of Greedo with his blaster to get out of a sticky situation. And he was like the ultimate badass, and everybody loved it. And then the re-release of A New Hope, the special edition, came out in the 1990s. And George Lucas said, I wouldn't want to make him too much of a badass. Let's make him more defensive. And made a thing where Greedo shot first, and Han CGI jerked his head to the side away from the blaster, and then he shot Greedo. So it became Greedo shot first instead of Han shot first.
And people were cool with it.
And this
they were
became,
like, ah, that's a minor detail.
Oh, yeah,
we're not going to get worked up.
No, it didn't go over that well. Well, it turns out that in the 4K restoration of Star Wars...
Well, hold on. There was a part in the Blu-ray where they edited again, and the blue, and then they shot basically simultaneously, and they were like, "And that takes care of that one," and it didn't, because everybody's just like, "Just fucking change it back." What are we talking about here? And they refused to do it.
You know when else there was a Blu-ray? When her parents left Jakku and left her
not
there.
Bad. Not bad.
I got that reference.
So there was that incarnation as well. Then George Lucas according to Variety, I believe it was, went back and worked on the 4K transition for Star Wars to now be on the streaming service, and once again tinkered with the scene. Now it's a situation where
they shoot simultaneously.
They shoot simultaneously, but he inserted an extra beat where Greedo says what sounds like McClunky.
Yes, that's correct.
So
to make it sound like he basically said you're dead or something like that.
You're dead.
But the problem is that McClunky is the only thing Greedo says in that scene that is not subtitled. So, like, they didn't even add that detail to it. They were just like, McClunky's good enough for us, folks. And Michael Eisner, or Bob, what's his name? Bob Iger?
Bob Iger.
Yeah, Bob Iger was like, that works for us. We're going to put it on the streaming service and not tell anybody. And then when people went to watch A New Hope on Tuesday, like I did, he said to them, McClunky. And
McClunky.
They were like, what?
Yeah, he says McClunky, and then they shoot simultaneously. Now, here's the thing. A Twitter handle called Mildly Exasperated has actually found out what Greedo is saying here. McClunky is a phrase that is actually Huttese, so the language spoken by Jabba the Hutt and all of the other Hutts. It's actually Ma Clownkey, M-A-K-L-O-U-N-K-E-E, and means this is the end of you. Keep in mind that Tatooine is under Hutt control. Everybody speaks a bit of the language. Mildly Exasperated goes on to say, remember the alien that raced against Anakin in The Phantom Menace, Sebulba? He threatened Anakin with the same phrase. And that dude and Greedo were in deep with the Hutts. And I think it's actually kind of cool to tie those threads together. So there you go.
He's wrong about that, this person who said that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. Go ahead.
It's stupid. Just leave it like it was. Everybody, you know what everybody liked is the original Star Wars. You know what nobody liked is the, like, when the frickin' guy almost falls off the big elephant thing outside the cantina and Han Solo steps on Jabba the Hutt's tail, and he looks really blurry doing it. People didn't like that part. And so, just, like, I don't know what's so hard for, like, I know why George Lucas didn't want to do it, but you know what Disney could have done? Was just be like, we're just going to put out the original cut, and everybody will fucking love it. People will lose their minds. They'll be so happy.
I'm sure that'll happen at some point. I mean, I don't know for sure.
We've been saying that for 15 years, and it hasn't happened, so.
It's a good point.
Just do it, man. Let's go.
Okay. Last pop culture thing for the episode. AV Club released its top 100 TV shows of the last decade. We're not going to do all 100, but I'll give you the top 10. Fleabag.
Haven't seen.
30 Rock.
Started in the 2000s. Yeah.
It started in 2006 and finished in 2013, and yet 30 Rock is like ninth.
Yeah.
Bob's Burgers.
Great show.
Is it the eighth
best show in the decade? I would err on the side of no, but also, like, I've seen every episode.
Sean, you seem like a Bob Burgers kind of guy, too. No or yes?
I've got bad news for you, then. No, I have never seen it. I am vaguely aware of it. That probably puts it solidly in the top 10 of television shows of the last decade.
I was a huge Simpsons fan, as you know, many are, including Ryan, I don't know if it's because of how much I hated Family Guy, but I've never really given a lot of the animation outside of King of the Hill on Fox much time, and so I didn't get into Bob's Burgers, but I understand it's very good.
I would recommend it. I think it just kind of hit the ground running and is really stayed in its lane really well, and it, you know, in much the same way The Simpsons kind of did up until about season 8 when it started getting a little wacky.
Right.
Which, you know, people have their own opinions about that. The Simpsons effectively ended for me halfway through season 9, so.
Mm-hmm. There you go. The Leftovers at number 7,
very
never
good.
Liked it.
Very good show.
I found it to be excruciating, and I'm so happy that Watchmen is a lot better.
Oof, that's incorrect.
The Good Place at number six. Now, Ruby started watching this, and she says that it was good, the first season at least. People really like it. The AV Club especially likes it.
Yeah, well, it's like... The problem with it is this. And I'm looking at the AV Club's little blurb on, and it says, so much television, so much art grapples with what it means to be good, but The Good Place makes that philosophical conundrum its entire crux. And it's like, right, but they say that the whole time. Like, it's one thing to go, oh, this is about, you know, what it means to be a good person or whatever, but to very just explicitly go, this show is about what it means to be a good person is like... And just have characters saying that back and forth to each other for four seasons. It got a little tiresome. I liked it at first, but it kind of lost its fastball there season and a half in, which isn't great.
The Americans at five.
Awesome show. Perfect show.
I've heard it's a really good show, and I will admit that I never committed time to watching it. But I am a huge Matthew Rhys fan. I think he's a fantastic actor.
Yeah, he is.
And very exciting that this is a show that I will definitely like binge at some point because it looked great. Parks and Rec started in 2009, went to 2015.
Not part of this decade, so.
Not from this decade. But if it was, would it be top 10?
No, of course not.
Parks and Rec was a show I came to very late because the first season was so bad.
Yeah.
And Office derivative, and I never got into it. And then through Ruby, like, she was a huge Parks and Rec fan, and she's like, no, like, you got to revisit it because they find their voice,
they definitely do, as the show goes on. What I would say is it is a show for the Obama era. A lot of the, you know, of the politics and the, like, viewpoint of the show was – effectively.
Optimistic.
Yeah, well, it was just effectively like, oh, none of this shit matters. Trump's the president now. You know what I mean? Like, it just, yeah, it was optimistic, but it was also like, oh, you know, you can love your insane libertarian neighbor who buries gold in his backyard because he's a good person at heart. And it's like, no, it turned out that's not true. He's just a psycho and should be treated as such. And so, like, I just think that it, because of the way politics basically took a hard turn there, you know, it has not aged well.
It did give the world Aubrey Plaza, and it gave the world Star-Lord as well.
It did.
That's exciting.
And he's very funny on it. He's like insanely funny on that show, but you know.
And also gave the world what's his face, Ron Swanson. It was a really funny character on that show.
Well, that's the libertarian guy I'm talking about. Now it's he would have 100% voted for Trump, and then it's okay. Totally. Well,
yeah. Number three, Atlanta. I mean, it's definitely top 10 for me. It's fantastic. Number two, Mad Men.
Not from
which should be number
2000s,
one
or the 2010s. Started in
2007, 2015, and then number one was Breaking Bad, thing. Which also started in 2008. Yeah. So if you're looking for purebred this decade, the Americans, Leftovers, Bob's Burgers, and Fleabag were like the only ones that were actually in this decade.
Yeah, right. It's like saying, you know who is the best band of the 1990s? Metallica. And it's like, well, no, I mean, like, they had like four albums or three albums before 1990. No,
the one
they're an 80.
The one show I would definitely elevate here that didn't make the top 10, and I can't understand why it didn't, was Veep. Fucking Veep was 20th.
Well, Veep, you know, a pale recreation of The Thick of It. So that doesn't help it. Yeah, I mean, Veep was very good. Everybody's very funny on it. You know what show should have been in the top 10 and wasn't? Hannibal.
Hannibal's another
Ooh,
one.
Oh boy, what a great
also,
show.
Nathan For You, I would
Nathan
put in the top 10
too. Review, another great Comedy Central show. Yeah, and I'm sure these are all on the list somewhere. I just kind of scrolled down.
Nathan For You is 27th.
Better Call Saul,
like,
show so far.
I know everybody loves Finding Francis, the big like feature length series finale of Nathan For You.
Incredible.
But you could have just left that out, and it would have been top 10 for
oh,
me.
Oh, sure.
Like, there was genius comedy on that show.
I just want to say that just for
shows,
fun,
Sean?
As you guys were talking, I thought it would be cool if I started at the top of the list at number one and work my way down until I got to a show that I'd actually seen multiple episodes of.
Oh, nice.
And I thought,
and?
I got to number 25, and the first show that I encountered that I'd seen multiple episodes of is The Great British Baking Show. So I feel extremely uncool now, and I'm just going to shut up and not take part in the
No, it's cool. You're right, Sean. It's cool that we watch this much TV. We're actually really
not
cool guys.
It's bad.
I feel like there's
it's
a middle ground
really
between
bad.
Seeing all of this stuff and not having seen any of it. But,
participating in the culture in any
way.
I'm
going to pretend that we don't get these shows in Canada, which is completely untrue, but it's the closest cover I can get to.
Yeah, through the
Adventist. Where do you feel about where do you think Little Mosque on the Prairie should have been on this one?
I saw Schitt's Creek show up on this, and the fact that that has suddenly become like a prestige show in America is very interesting to
haven't
us
seen
upstairs.
1 second of it. The terribleness of the name was the big turnoff for me there.
We all saw plenty of it, and we were like, yeah, that's fine, and then. It just Celine Dion its way down there, and apparently it's a great show now. So enjoy that.
Yeah, well, it's defined by the AV Club as a decorated hit in its native Canada.
Yeah, which is that decorated a false, hit. Yeah, like we make four shows a year, and it was definitely in the top three.
It's won two Junos, so it's the most popular show in the history of Canada.
Well, what was the other one that made its way down here? Was it Slings and Arrows was the other one?
I would say barely. Like, that was a, 10-episode TV show over two seasons? Like, I don't... I mean, it did get us
Rachel
McAdams
was on that, wasn't
she? That's about it.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, Canadian TV. I've been impressed with how much impact or I guess, like, I don't know what the correct word would be, but, like people are cognizant of Trailer Park Boys down here. And people are definitely fans of Letterkenny down here. So from that aspect, there's definitely some impact. But yeah, the Schitt's Creek thing surprised me. Schitt's Creek for a long time was my favorite show to watch over the shoulder of people on airplanes. A lot of people watch Schitt's Creek on airplanes for some reason. I couldn't tell you why. All right. That's the show for this week. Thanks to the Pubic Hair Trimming Company. And the
I wonder if they have
secondary,
a name. Probably not.
The secondary ticket market company. Thanks to everybody for listening. My name is Greg Wyszynski. You can find my stuff on ESPN.com. I have a column up today that deals with some Hall of Fame stuff, as well as the usual nonsense, winners and losers and stuff like that. Also, earlier this week, did a big piece on one of our favorite topics, players synonymous with one jersey who ended up in another jersey at one point in their career that looked odd on them. The proverbial Mike Modano as a Red Wing, Bobby Orr as a Blackhawk. I completely forgot, Sean, that Wendell Clark was a Blackhawk. That was something that I completely forgot.
You're referring
to
lifelong Toronto Maple Leaf Wendell Clark, so I don't know what you're talking about.
Who never played for
I don't
for
know
Maple
what sort
Eagles.
Of
yeah,
photoshopped
not
images
Islanders
you've been
legend,
tricked by, but he...
Yeah.
He certainly never played for them or the Red Wings or the Tampa Bay Lightning or anybody else.
Uh-huh. And then also I have another podcast called ESPN on Ice with Emily Kaplan. We talked to this gentleman, Down Goes Brown. We talked to Barry Melrose. And we talked to Ed Belfour this week as well about his new career as a whiskey distiller, Ed Belfour. Every bottle costs $1 billion. Very interesting. I didn't make that joke to Ed Belfour.
Howard.
Also... thank you. Also, bonus episode dropping this week, and you're going to fucking love it. It is a Hall of Fame-centric bonus episode on the Patreon in which we talk about the Hockey Hall of Fame as a facility, philosophically, and then we each remove two people and put two people into the Hockey Hall of Fame that currently aren't inside of it. So do check that out on the Puck Soup Patreon.
Oh, and also sign up for the newsletter on the Patreon. Write a newsletter every week, and then we also, me and Sean Gentile from The Athletic, do an episode of our old podcast, Stick to Sports, once a month. So that's $3 if you sign up for all the other stuff, or $4 if you don't. And it's a good deal that everybody thinks is great.
Subscribe to The Athletic. You can find me there. I had my thoughts on the Don Cherry situation on Tuesday, and if you're looking for something a little bit lighter, I've got Hall of Fame debates, as well as on Friday, the grab bag is coming out, and I'm going to look at the pros and cons of Brian Burke taking over for Don Cherry.
Wow, there you go. All right, great stuff, everybody, and we will talk to you next week. Thanks for listening and supporting the show.
Bye-bye.
See you.
Sticks and hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons. We've got sportly commentary to an NFL commute. But we also cover movies, TV shows, hits and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hockey and nonsense. Part two.